On this episode of the Endurance Hour podcast, balance as a triathlete, building swim fitness, functional mobility screening, and massage therapy. Plus, why do you try? The Endurance Hour podcast starts right now.
People, are you ready? Let's start the show.
And welcome back once again to the Endurance Hour podcast, episode 154. Big thanks to all of you who listened last week as Roger and I were talking about bike fits, bike fitness, and a very popular topic, and that is knowing your why. Why do you try? We started talking about this topic about midway through the podcast based on a book that, or an audiobook that Roger suggested to me a few weeks back called Start With Why. I really encourage you to check that out on, I listened to on Audible, and it's only about 7-8 hours long. Really good listen. And so we are trying to get the depth of what is your why. And the why is your purpose, your cause, your belief. Why should anyone care? So you need to understand your why that you take part in this wonderful sport we call triathlon, a swimming, biking, and running. And we had some good interaction on our Facebook page. You can find us at Endurance Hour on Facebook. And Laura was replying back, and there's just a couple of exchanges I'll read here, that she says, you know, that episode was so good, I'm going to listen to it again. And we kind of were trying to engage with her more about what is your why, Laura? And Lane, L-A-Y-N-E, Lane Argyle, I hope I'm saying your name right. Lane replied, you know, I love listening to you guys. Keep it up. My why? In a nutshell, I love competition. I don't like being obese. I love to help my kids achieve their goals. The sport of triathlon and the triathlon community has simply changed my life. I feel more alive than I have for several years. Jesse Thompson also chimed in. There's a nice little thread there between Laura as well as Jesse on our Facebook page. I'll let you go ahead and read that. But I think it's a good little lesson here to challenge yourself on what is your motivation? Why are you in this sport? Do you have selfish goals? Is it all about you? Is it about being recognized by your fellow athletes? Are you a sponsored athlete? Maybe you have some other motives there. Are you looking to make money? Do you want to go pro? Everyone has their reasons. Sometimes it's just a matter of staying fit, maybe bettering yourself from the year before, maintaining fitness levels as we age. There's a lot of different ideas, and if you'd like to share yours, go ahead and continue on that thread on our Facebook page. And one more thing here on our Facebook page before I go on to today's topics. I posted a photo. This was on, I guess, this 22nd of February, and it was a little caption contest. And I saw this, maybe I saw it on Instagram. By the way, if you want to follow me on Instagram, my handle is I am Dave Erickson. And it's a bear, someone obviously photoshopped this, chasing a solo cyclist on a two-lane road out in the country. There's snow all around, but it's kind of funny. And I'll just read the comments that were left behind right now. Frank wrote, stupid bear is always drafting me. And John says, hey, you got any honey gels on you? John wrote, for once, making a breakaway off the Peloton has paid off. Those guys are screwed. And Barry wrote here, State Park Keeper designs new VO2 max test for cyclists. When I saw this post or this photo, I also read one comment that said, meals on wheels, because the bear is chasing the cyclist and thinking that's going to be his next meal. Kind of cute. Take a look at it on our Facebook page. All right, here as episode 154, four guests today. We've got Trista Francis out of Colorado, a longtime coach there, talking about balance as a triathlete. And not like balance in the water or balance on the bicycle, but balance in your life. Not juggling triathlon, but how to find an even keel as you work full-time, as you try to take on this sport, as you have a family, your friends, where does it fit into your life, and how do you find balance? So a great discussion with her. Kelly Phil now, building swim fitness. Kelly's an excellent professional triathlete and we have a nice discussion about building your swim fitness, because I'm sure at this point in your season, you're still putting in those miles, and we're cranking out in February. So I know the season's really kicking off here in a couple months, and this might help you get some balance in the water. Functional mobility screening with Greg Gallagher, another coach here out of the Spokane, Washington area. This is a pretty good idea if you want to find out your weak points in how your body is not built, but there are some flexibility issues. If you go through some of these screening protocols, you'll find out where you may have some weakness, whether it's flexibility in your hips, your shoulder flexibility, those kind of things. So Greg's going to talk to us about that. And we'll finish off with one of my favorite activities, and that's massage therapy with Dr. Brian Mather out of Spokane, Washington as well. So let's go ahead and kick it off, first of all, with Trista Francis. We are busy triathletes, but a lot of us are also full-time employees. We are husbands and wives, and we've got a real life outside of the swim, bike, run arena. So Trista, how do you balance all of that and still be a successful human being?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely challenging to do that. But I think the thing to remember is that you just have to remember that you are looking for balance. And what does that balance look like? I think the first thing you kind of need to do is you need to look at your priorities and really list out what are your priorities. You know, what's top of the list? Is it triathlon or is it your family? You know, is it your spouse? What is it? And then look at the things that you enjoy and the things that you need to really feel balanced as an individual. You know, I know definitely through my athletic career, you know, those focuses have changed. And I remember early years of racing, I remember having really lofty goals as a triathlete. And then I remember getting in my off season and getting back into the kitchen and being domestic and cooking and baking. And I missed it. Like, I missed it a lot. And I remember thinking at that point, I'm like, I need to change this. Like, I shouldn't go 10 months without doing this, you know? And so I think there's lots of ways we can incorporate training and being able to still do those other things that we like to do. You know, I think the biggest thing, which is new for us, is I think, you know, there's a lot of activities and people that maybe are wasting our time. You know, and we need to address those. How many open up their phone when their alarm goes off and they lay in bed for 20 minutes, you know, scanning social media? That's a huge time waster where you could literally be halfway through a swim workout at that point. So I think that's really important to consider as well. You know, depending on the age of, if you're a father or a mother and you have a family, depending on the age, you know, or the activity level of your family, I build into my training around being able to ride with my husband and being able to run with my girls. And I will adapt my training a little bit to be able to do that and spend that time. I think it's important as far as family life is concerned is that, you know, the family doesn't necessarily feel like your training is a priority over them. And I think those things really help avoid that. You know, if you're a single working professional and you're trying to do it, you know, I think lunchtime is a great time to try to squeeze in a workout. As a multi-sport athlete, generally you're doing, you know, two workouts a day. We all know that you have to get up early in the morning. You know, as a mother of young kids, I did all my training before 7 a.m. I didn't want to take my kids to, you know, the daycare. And so I did all my training before 7 a.m. You know, but if you're that, you know, working professional, I think those are really key times, is early morning or during lunch. I know one time I was coaching an athlete through Ironman, and he was really starting to feel a little bit of pull from his wife and family, because both of his Saturday and Sundays were completely, you know, eaten up by training, you know, long bike on Saturday, you know, long swim and run on Sunday and that sort of thing. And we had a conversation and I said, okay, let's do this. I said, do you have one lunch during the week that we can manage a long run? And he thought about it and he thought about it. And he said, Thursdays. I said, great, you've got Sundays off. And he was like, what? And all of a sudden the wife's happy, the kids are happy. We didn't really have to change anything at all. You know, I mean, we changed the time, but we didn't have to cut back his hours or his volume. And that changed so much in how that impacted the family.
Talk about some time management skills or ideas. And I know you did, working out in the morning, but I bring this up because in college I had a time management class, and it really taught me how to block out every 15 minutes of my day. And so I recognized that at the end of the day, there were some open spots there that either I wasted or I did mm-hmm. nothing or I was productive.
I think the biggest thing with this is drive time. So, I can spend an hour a day driving to the gym and home from the gym to do a spin class or to do weights. And I can spend another, 15 minutes to get to a trailhead to run, another 15 minutes to get back. That adds a lot of time, And so what I try to do is I try to tack training onto errands, dropping kids off at school, that sort of thing. And sometimes, as much as I would love to, go out to Waterton Canyon and, 30 minutes away, if I just run out my front door, and get it done. And so it's kind of what's the price that I want to pay? What am I willing to do? And so I think just really managing that. And I think sometimes too, I'll notice that athletes that I work with, they'll come home after a day and it will take them 45 minutes to an hour to get into that last training session, especially if maybe they've had three training sessions. And, there's part of me that's like, why don't you just stop at the gym on the way home from work? And, then by the time they do their 45 minute run, they're actually walking through the door when they would actually be just leaving to go start their run. So I think it's really just being attentive to that dead time that can happen if we're not paying attention to it.
All right. How about that working professional who has to travel quite a bit? What are some suggestions on getting a workout in there?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I've had some very interesting working professionals. I've coached a pilot for United, and that's a very interesting schedule. And the thing with that is, I think the key is just being really aware of what's available to you. So generally when the working professional, they generally go to the same places is what I've learned. On occasion, they'll go to a new environment, but they are very predictable in kind of their travel or where they like to stay. And therefore, we know what facilities are available to them, And so I think that that's important to know, what's available to you, because you're going to spend a lot less time looking for a gym if you know that, like the hotel you're staying at has a stationary bike and, a treadmill or some weights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine who will go travels quite a bit. It's on the road a lot. He'll look up for the closest YMCA or mm-hmm. where it might be the closest pool, because that's one of those factors that's most hard to find or get in. We can always go on a treadmill. We can go out the door of the hotel and run. The stationary bikes are a little challenging for fit and position, but there are ways.
Yeah. And the thing that I have found is that a lot of times working professionals sometimes feel like they have more time when they're away because they're not being tugged at with maybe things at home or to-dos at home, and so that's something to account for too, is, how do you have more time when you actually travel? So that's been interesting as well.
You can learn more about Trista at itzmultisport.com. ITZ stands for in the zone. itzmultisport.com. Trista, thanks for that. All right, Kelly Philnow with philnowcoaching.com has a good little discussion here, about 7-8 minutes long, about building your swim fitness and some ideas that will help you get a little faster and build your overall endurance in the water. Here's Kelly.
Today's question comes from YouTube using the hashtag AskCoachPhilNow. It says here, hi, I ride a lot on the bike. Sometimes I go to the pool, but I'll swim 75 to 100 meters and I get tired. How often should I swim to increase my endurance? He also passes along his height and weight, but I'm not sure if that matters, Kelly.
Thanks for the question. That's a great question. And it seems like you definitely have good endurance from the bike, but now it's just transferring that over into the pool. And I would highly recommend swim frequency instead of going to the pool 2 times a week and swimming an hour session with lots of rest. What I would recommend doing is swimming 4 days a week, starting at around 20 minutes. And then from there, increasing about 5 minutes per week. So then the next week, doing 4 days a week for 25 minutes, and then just building from there. And that will make a huge difference, because if you're just in the pool for an hour to 70 minutes, you are going to be fatiguing, and your body is not going to be able to perform as well when that technique starts getting sloppy. So if there are shorter sessions, that will enable your technique to be there for the duration of the session. And then also maybe trying to get a lesson or two with a local swim coach, and that coach can give you good technique tips that you can incorporate into your own sessions. And then a drill that I would recommend doing is just working on hypoxic breathing, because that's one of the hardest adjustments from being a land athlete to being in the water. So doing sets like, maybe start with using fins, and don't be afraid to use swim tools too when you're learning how to swim. And I would say breathe every 3 strokes. So you're focusing on that bilateral breathing, and then every 5 strokes, then back to 3, then try 7 strokes in a row, and then back to 3. And then that, and also just working on that bilateral breathing will make a big difference, because your body will be much more relaxed when you're swimming. And then if you're more relaxed, you'll be more efficient as well. And then a good workout to do as well would be ladder swimming. So, you know, start off with 25 meters, then 50, then 75, then back down to 50, then 25. And then the next week, maybe trying going up to 100, and then 150, and then just building from there. And that'll give you confidence as you're able to achieve it on a weekly basis too. So.
Can you define that hypoxic or hypoxia training?
Yeah, so basically that's just focusing on your breathing skills. And so what I would recommend doing is trying to focus on going as many breaths as you can. So starting at with just the bilateral with 3, and then building from there to 5 to 7, to trying to do a 25 with only one breath. And that can be super beneficial for doing when you're doing open water training too, because a lot of times you can get overwhelmed in the water, and maybe your breathing is a little bit more chaotic than when you are in the pool. So just developing good breathing skills makes a huge difference. And I even sometimes do, instead of doing bilateral breathing, I'll do every 2 strokes and every 4 strokes, and it's only focusing on that, maybe that right side, which translates into, if you're, you know, swimming open water and that the buoys are on one side, it might be easier to breathe to both sides. So focusing on your breathing on a daily basis in the pool makes a huge difference.
So it's helping your body relax and adapt to extended periods of time when you can't breathe?
Yes, exactly. And just helping that aerobic capacity too.
And so it sounds like what you're saying here, it's the quality of the swim versus the quantity, even though you want to talk about maybe going 4 times, but get those sessions to be great form, great technique, and while you're still fresh, because once you get past a point, you're fatigued and you lose all potential of having a great workout.
Absolutely. And the most important thing you can do is be practicing, not just practicing all the time, you know, but you have to have perfect focus practice. So once you become overly fatigued, that's not going to be a good focus practice any longer. So you're not doing your body, you know, as much good as if you're limiting the duration until what your body can actually handle, and, you know, making it that good quality practice over quantity. And, you know, just your body likes that muscle memory. So if you're, you know, having that frequency, and then it's you're swimming Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, well, then on Tuesday, for instance, your body's going to already, you know, have that in your mind, like you've been there before the day before. And so that swim frequency will make a big difference too.
So swimming with a purpose.
Yes. Yes. Definitely always with a purpose in training.
Again, check out philnowcoaching.com to learn more about Kelly, the professional triathlete, former college tennis player, now, a professional triathlete and a coach. So philnowcoaching.com. All right, Greg Gallagher talks about some functional mobility screening. He's with speedtheorymultisport.com, and he's been on the show last couple of months giving us little tips here and there. So this one I think you'll find important, and if you need more information, go ahead and just type that into Google somewhere and you'll get some more insight. But here's my short talk with Greg about functional mobility screening.
So for some of you, it is the off season. I guess it depends on where you live in the world. It could be your off season. Greg, you got some ideas on a screening test that can help athletes prepare for their on season. What is that called?
It's a function and mobility screening, and it's with a physical therapist. And I just want to point out that I think one of the number one people you need in your corner besides a coach is a physical therapist. They're gonna put you back together when things maybe go wrong, maybe some overuse injuries and stuff. And so I work with Gail Anderson at Mount Spokane Physical Therapy here in Spokane. And what they do is you go in and they put you through a screening process, and they figure out where, say, your weaknesses may be. And for an example, we'll use a push-up. So let's say he asked me to do a push-up. So if I have pain with that push-up, that's a red flag that there's a problem. So then it takes you down another avenue to fix that problem. Let's say I can do the push-up, but I can't do very many, or I'm kind of shaky. Well, you're scored, so the pain is going to give you a zero score. And say you're a little sloppy, you know, don't hold your form very well, then that's another score. And so then they build a plan to work with you to fix the weaknesses, because a weakness is going to turn into an injury down the road. Mm-hmm. So that's I feel that was one thing that did me a lot of good last year, is going through that screening and spending the time to do all the exercises that he had given me.
So besides a push-up test, and does that fall under function more than mobility?
Yeah, because that would be a function. The mobility would be, you know, a flexibility. He did another test where you had to step over a specific line that he had measured out, and if you're not flexible enough, maybe your hamstrings are tight, you can't do it, because just the way it's designed, it's really, really looking for weaknesses and inflexibility. So yeah, it does both.
I think I'm familiar with this type of testing. I've seen it done before. Sometimes they'll use a broomstick and they put it over your shoulders to see how flexible your shoulders are, or a balancing trick where you kind of go down, or right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
The broomstick one is one that we have done in the past, and how you hold it above your head, you know, behind your head above, and then you squat down. And if you can squat all the way down without your heels coming off the ground, then you have that perfect flexibility and you're able to make the movement. But if you start leaning forward and you can't go all the way down, well, then there's tightness and there's issues. And so again, you're scored a certain way. And then at the end of the screening, you add up all the scores and figure out where you're at. And then you work on the problems that they found.
And so the physical therapist can then prescribe some type of workouts or drills or exercises to target and make you better in those areas.
Yes, exactly. Depending on how many issues you have, the more exercises you're going to end up with.
Do you recall if he has said, this is Gail Anderson, what parts of the body people find the most trouble with?
I didn't get that. I'm assuming it's going to be in the back. Uh-huh. Back issues are so, they're probably one of the ones that they deal with the most, just in general. And in athletes, you know, you put a lot of strain on your back sitting on that tri bike for several hours at a time, and you know, neck issues. So yeah, I would think probably back issues would be probably the number one thing.
I can imagine also hip flexibility, hamstring tightness, and so on. Now, that is an initial screening test. There's got to be some follow-ups to see what kind of progress a person's made.
Right, and what he does is for 150, you can go in there and you get three screenings set up. So you'll do your first one. That will figure out where you're at, figure out some problems. He'll give you the exercises, and then he wants to see you every 4 to 6 weeks for the second one, and then again for the third one. And he's hoping that we're all doing our exercises, doing what we're supposed to do, and we're getting better. And then maybe on the second one, maybe he finds something that he wants to tweak, and he gives you some more exercises. And for a triathlete who's got a long season, you know, probably 4 to 6 weeks is a good number to get screened. And I mean, if your season, let's say you're training for a whole entire year, you start in November and you race Kona in October. Well, that's going to be about 8 visits. So, and then after the 150, I believe he said it was $50 every time you go in. So you're not obligated to another 3. So
what have you found to be some problem spots that you've discovered?
Shoulder. Yep. I brought up the push-up thing because I've had some shoulder issues in the pool using paddles. It just, you know, if I use them too much, I start straining my shoulders. And when I worked with him last time, I was having an impingement in the back of my shoulder, and we worked on it, and then it went away. So I just try to be cautious on some of the exercises, such as push-ups, such as, you know, plank. I got to be careful with plank too if my shoulder's aggravated. So that was the main issue. I think the main problem was the shoulder thing.
And this is a recommendation to do the end of your season, or as you ramp up for your full season, so you can get some of these things addressed early on.
Right, and so with me, if you sign up for me. With me as a coach, that's going to be the one thing that I'm going to have you do. You're going to go see Gail. He's going to put you through it. Then we're all going to sit and talk and figure out where your problems are. Let's say that he can say, oh, this athlete has a specific problem with his shoulder or a knee. Well, then I know as a coach what I can and can't prescribe to him because of an issue that we're dealing with. And again, earlier you find it, the better off you're going to be later in the season. Once you start getting a lot of miles in, a lot of yards in the pool, that overuse is going to flare up an injury if there's definitely a weakness. And the asymmetry is you know, if things aren't balanced, you got to figure out why they're not balanced. So I think a huge part of getting started before your training really gets going.
All right, this has been called function and mobility screening because, as you said, your words, a weakness can develop into an injury if not addressed. And I think it's so important for us with as many hours as we're putting in.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
SpeedTheoryMultisport.com to learn more about Greg and his services. If you're looking for a coach online, Greg may be able to help you there. Dr. Brian Mather, the owner of the Spokane Chiropractic and Sports Injury Clinic, will talk to us now about massage therapy. You know, Roger and I have talked about this numerous times, how maybe one of your training workouts is actually designated as massage therapy day. So maybe on your off day, you can just, maybe you have a workout plan for Saturday. Maybe at the end of your day on Thursday, assuming you have a day off on Friday, it would be a good time to schedule in a massage because you need some time to let that sink in and do its work. But I think this will be helpful to learn more about the role of massage therapy for athletes like ourselves in the world of endurance sports. So here's Dr. Brian Mather. Can you define the role of massage therapy for people who are a little more active than others?
Sure. Massage therapy in active people or an athlete's can be used as a great way to recover from a training event or from a competition, especially in our clinic with the type of massage that we offer. We're typically going to be a lot deeper. The sole purpose is to get in and to, for lack of a better term, disrupt the tissue. As you overuse tissue, you develop this cumulative trauma to the tissue, and it actually forms scar tissue over time. So lots of people think scar tissue has to come from an injury or from a surgery. You can have repetitive microtrauma from irritating the muscles day in and day out, and collectively over time, you'll develop scar tissue. So massage therapy comes in, and the deeper tissue work allows an athlete to have those muscles sort of broken up and worked out, and you got to flush all the fluids out of them. You got to flush the different cellular waste that gets deposited into the muscle tissue from training, from running and cycling and any kind of training that you do. And so by getting in and doing the deeper type of massage, it really helps to flush out the toxins in your system, loosen up those tissues, and give them a chance to remodel and to heal so that you have proper function. I think one of the things that we often see is patients will come in and they think they're coming in for a relaxation massage, as it would be called, which would be kind of like going to the spa and laying there for an hour and probably falling asleep in the middle of it. A good deep tissue massage I don't think anyone's ever fallen asleep in one of those. You're usually sort of figuring a way to get through that type of a massage. But when you're done, the results are dramatic often, and they're long lasting. And that's what I like. Instead of an hour or two later, you know, you get out in traffic and you're driving home and you're all stressed out again from crazy traffic. That relaxation massage often has lost its effectiveness, but a deep tissue massage will last for a much longer period of time.
You touched on some of this already, but what's the, some of the downsides if you ignore a sore body or a sore muscle part?
That soreness usually is an indication that you have some type of dysfunction, whether it be in the joints or the muscles, and the ignoring that process usually leads to an injury that becomes more chronic. It usually becomes worse. Your body is a magnificent compensatory machine. It compensates for a long period of time. So usually you're going to create problems in other areas of your body. And by ignoring those problems, it just takes that much longer to get them better once you finally decide to address them. And from an athletic perspective, you often end up having to take time off instead of being able to train through it.
For someone who's watching this for the first time, they think they have or they do have a lower back problem or pain. They think, oh, I need to get a massage in my back. You've told me that that pain point isn't necessarily the source of your pain. It's somewhere else.
Yeah, I would say probably in 50% of the cases that we see in our clinic, the pain, the site of pain is not the site of problem. So we can't always just go right to where it hurts. Often you have a problem, your body compensates for that problem, and the pain shows up in an area that's different than the root cause. And the lower back is one of those. Leg pain is also common. People that have what's called sciatica, they'll have pain that travels down the back of their leg. There's 12 different causes of pain that runs down the back of your leg. A disc herniation or low back pain are just one of those. So there's a lot of times where we have to look at other parts of the body to figure out the root cause of the pain that a patient's having.
I know you're a sports injury clinic, but the things that massage therapy can address even impact people who are sitting at a desk all day long, right? You don't have to be an active, seriously active, or be into a sport to have the need for a massage somewhere, right? Or what would be some common areas, I should say?
Well, to follow up on that comment that you made, we talk about cumulative trauma disorders. And so sometimes we think of an athlete running all the time as a repetitive. But if you sit at your desk 8 hours a day, day after day, that's a cumulative trauma. The postural overloads in the muscles, the imbalances in the muscles that are created from just being sedentary, create equally as many problems in your body as being overactive does. In fact, I would argue that being active is a way to combat that problem, and it would be a great way to minimize that. But unfortunately, in our society, we have a lot of people that they have to sit at a desk in front of a computer for their job. And so that takes its toll over time. And massage therapy addresses that really well. You'll see a lot of neck pain and upper back pain. The muscles that run across our shoulders here and connect our shoulder to our neck, called the trapezius muscles, where everybody says, that's where I hold my stress. So if you've ever had stress in your life, those muscles get tense and they get tight. But massage therapists, there's different styles of massage therapy, and you can either address it from a full body perspective or you can address it regionally. So depending on where you might have the problems, the therapists often will focus their treatment on those areas to try to help those patients the best they can.
And finally, what kind of regular routine or how often should someone seek out a more sports massage therapy?
Well, I think like any treatment plan, it depends on the individual. So I've never been a huge fan of generically saying you need to get treatment once a month or something like that. A lot of it really depends on what the patient's needs are. I think it's one of the things that we try to focus on in our clinic is not necessarily making patients come in, but only allowing them to come in, or I shouldn't say allowing them, but encouraging them to come in when they need to. So for an average athlete, for example, that's in some type of training program, is training for a marathon or for a triathlon or any type of event, I would say as your training regimen increases, the need or the frequency for massage or chiropractic care is probably going to increase as well. It's kind of like driving your car. You got to change the oil every 5,000 miles. If you drive those 5,000 miles in a couple of weeks, or if it takes you a year to drive those 5,000 miles, you need to change the oil at that appropriate time frame. So it's a bit of a challenging question to answer as just a generic, you should always get treatment every so often. It just really depends on the athlete.
All right, Dr. Brian Mather with the Spokane Chiropractic and Sports Injury Clinic. Thanks very much.
You bet. Thanks, Dave.
Well, that's going to wrap it up. Big thanks again to Trista, Kelly, Greg, and Dr. Mather for being our special guests, sharing their advice, expertise, and knowledge about all things endurance sports training and recovery. This is episode 154. Roger and I will be back in a week or so, maybe a little bit longer. It all depends on our travel plans. So what is your why? As we kind of kicked off the episode that way, do you know your why? Why are you in the sport of triathlon? Please join the conversation on our Facebook page and follow us there. For Roger Thompson, I'm Dave Erickson. Have a great week of training, racing, or recovery. We'll talk at you next time. Thanks.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young.